A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about the simplest thing in authentication. The API key. A string of characters you paste into a config file, and suddenly your code can talk to Stripe, or spin up cloud instances, or query a database. It works without browser redirects, without user consent screens, without any of the ceremony that comes with OAuth. So his question is, if API keys are so simple and flexible, why don't we use them for everything? And then he pushes deeper. What identity does an API key actually represent? A user? An application? A project? Or just possession of a secret? What security and authorization capabilities do we lose when we swap OAuth for a long-lived key? And when is an API key genuinely the right tool? Not merely the easiest one.
This is one of those questions where the answer starts simple and then gets uncomfortable fast. The API key is a bearer token. That's the technical term, and it's worth sitting with for a second. Bearer token means whoever bears the token is the authenticated party. Possession is identity.
So it's a key to a door, but the door doesn't know or care who's holding the key.
Right, and the door can't ask. That's the distinction. And here's what makes this interesting. API keys are everywhere. Stripe, Google Cloud, OpenAI, GitHub, every SaaS platform you can name. Yet every single one of those platforms also offers OAuth, or service accounts, or workload identity federation, or some more sophisticated mechanism. They're maintaining two parallel auth systems.
And if you copy that string and paste it somewhere else, the door has no way to know.
None. The key is the entire credential. There's no binding to a device, a session, a network location. This is why every cloud provider's documentation has that paragraph in bold telling you not to embed API keys in client-side code. But the reason they have to say it's that the key itself gives no protection if it leaks. An OAuth access token can be bound to a client secret, a redirect URI, a certificate thumbprint. The token alone isn't enough. Let's walk through the candidates. Candidate 1, the API key represents a user. This is what most developers intuitively assume. I generated this key from my account settings, so calls made with it are me. But that breaks down immediately.
Which makes it weird that we call it a key at all. A real key has a lock that can be rekeyed. An API key is more like a password that you hand to a stranger and hope they don't photocopy it.
That's actually a useful way to think about it. A password that you never change and that you give to every piece of code that needs to talk to the service. And the service can't tell which piece of code is which. Right, maybe the key identifies a specific application or service, but nothing in the key itself encodes that.
So let's go through Daniel's questions in order. First one. What identity does an API key actually represent? You're saying it represents nothing. But platforms do attach them to something, don't they?
There's no client registration, no client ID bound to the key. It's just a secret. It's a rate-limiting bucket with a name. On Google Cloud, an API key identifies a project for billing and quota purposes. On Stripe, a secret key represents your entire account. And even that's weak, because the key can be passed around. The project boundary is administrative. It determines whose quota gets consumed, whose billing account gets charged, but it's not a security boundary.
And not portable.
Not at all. An API key from one platform means something completely different from an API key on another. There's no standard. OAuth tokens, for all their complexity, at least have a standard format. And that's not a bug exactly, it's a design choice. The API key is a shared secret sent over an encrypted channel. The server says the caller presented a valid secret, therefore the caller is authorized. There's no identity layer at all. It's pure bearer authentication. Fine-grained permissions. An API key is typically all or nothing. You get access to everything the key grants, or nothing. Let's get concrete about what we lose. OAuth 2.0 gives you an access token that represents a delegated authorization decision.
And it's bolted on differently everywhere.
The token is bound to a specific audience, the resource server it's intended for. It can be short-lived, refreshed silently, or revoked independently of the client that requested it. If you revoke an API key, you revoke it for everything using it. There's no way to revoke access for one service while leaving it intact for another if they're sharing the key. We lose auditability. None of it. Let's start with the secret zero problem. This is the term for the bootstrapping challenge in authentication. You need a secret to get a secret. API keys are static. They're long-lived. They're often generated once and never rotated.
And we lose the ability to say no to specific things without saying no to everything.
That's the authorization piece. API keys are authentication without authorization. They prove you're allowed to talk to the API, but they don't say what you're allowed to do once you're talking. GitHub secret scanning detects millions of exposed credentials every year. API keys are consistently among the most common. And once a key is committed to a repository, even if you catch it immediately and rewrite the commit history, you have to assume it's compromised. The key doesn't become less valid just because you deleted the file.
So the key is a lobby pass, and every floor you want to visit requires a separate system that checks your badge against a list.
That's it. And the lobby pass never expires and works at every entrance, and you can't tell if someone photocopied it.
When are API keys the right mechanism rather than merely the easiest one?
Google Cloud API keys support three types of restrictions. IP addresses, HTTP refers, and API target, meaning which specific API the key can call. Those are opt-in. They're not configured by default. And in practice, almost nobody sets them up properly. The key lives in a secrets manager. It's rotated automatically. The network is isolated. That's a legitimate use.
What about public APIs, where the consumer is a third-party developer?
That's trickier. If you're running a public API and you want to track usage and enforce rate limits, API keys work well for that. They're not authenticating a user. They're identifying a project or an application for metering purposes. Google Maps does this. You get an API key, you embed it in your requests, Google tracks your quota. The key isn't proving you're you. It's proving you're the same entity that made the last 1,000 requests so they can bill you correctly.
And the thing being protected isn't user data. It's a map tile.
Right? The sensitivity of the resource matters enormously. API keys are appropriate when the resource being accessed is low sensitivity or when the key is just one layer in a defense in depth strategy. The mistake is using them as the only layer for something sensitive.
Let's talk about the places where they're the wrong choice and everyone uses them anyway.
Client-side code. This is the one that every security guide warns about and every developer has done at least once. You're building a mobile app or a single-page application, and you need to call your own backend or a third-party API. The API key goes into the app bundle or the JavaScript. At that point, the key is public. Anyone who downloads the app can extract it. Anyone who opens the browser DevTools can see it. It's not a secret anymore. It's a string that happens to work.
And the defense is usually, we'll restrict it by referrer or IP.
Which doesn't work for mobile apps, and for web apps, referrer headers are trivially spoofed. IP restrictions help in some server-side scenarios, but for client-side, they're useless. The only real solution is to put a backend in front of the API key. Your client talks to your server holds the key, your server makes the actual API call. The key never touches the client. OAuth tokens can be short-lived, minutes to hours, and refreshed silently in the background. If a token is compromised, the window of exposure is small. API keys live for months or years.
So the simplicity is the trap.
The simplicity is absolutely the trap. It's the easiest thing to implement and the hardest thing to secure properly. And the consequences of getting it wrong scale with the power of the key. Massive inertia. I've seen teams where the API key rotation task has been in the backlog for 18 months because nobody wants to be the person who accidentally takes down production by revoking a key that some forgotten service depends on. The longer you wait, the more services accrete around the key and the harder rotation becomes. It's a compounding security debt.
So the key that was supposed to be simple becomes this untouchable artifact that everyone's afraid to touch.
And that's the paradox of API key simplicity. The initial setup is trivial. Generate a key, paste it into an environment variable, you're done. But the long-term operational cost is enormous precisely because the key is so simple. It has no built-in mechanisms for rotation, scoping, attribution, or revocation. You have to build all of that yourself, and most teams don't. The fact that it's necessary tells you something about how often this goes wrong.
Let's dig into the cloud platform examples Daniel asked for. How do the big three handle this?
The publishable key is meant for client-side code. It's public. It can appear in your JavaScript. It identifies your Stripe account, but can only be used for tokenization, not for charging cards or accessing account data. The secret key is for server-side use only and has full account access. It can create charges, issue refunds, view customer data, everything. The access key is the fallback for when you can't use a role, like for a third-party tool or a local development environment.
And even then, they want you to use short-lived credentials.
I can issue refunds, download your customer list, change your account settings. There's no second factor, no step-up authentication for sensitive operations, no scope restriction on the key itself. They added IAM roles anywhere. They added IAM Identity Center. The direction of travel is clear, keys are legacy.
What about Google Cloud?
But it's an opt-in feature layered on top of the original model, and the default secret key still has unrestricted access. A service account is an identity. It has an email address. You can grant it IAM roles. You can generate keys for it, but again, the key is the fallback. Classic personal access tokens were scoped to the entire user account. If you generated a token with repo access, it could access every repository your account could see. Public, private, organization repos, everything.
And Azure?
Fine-grained tokens let you scope to individual repositories and specific permissions, read only on issues for one repo, write access on pull requests for another. A managed identity is an identity that Azure creates and manages for you. Your app running on an Azure VM gets a token from the instance metadata service. No key to store, no key to rotate, no key to leak. Right. GitHub was effectively backporting OAuth-style scoping into their API key model because the original model was too blunt an instrument.
So all three cloud providers have converged on the same answer. API keys are for metering and low-sensitivity access. Identity-based authentication is for everything else.
And they've all built infrastructure to make identity-based authentication the easy path. Managed identities, workload identity, IAM roles. I think there are three criteria. First, the identity of the caller doesn't matter, only that the caller possesses the secret.
Which they do anyway.
Which they do anyway, because the API key is what you learn first. Every tutorial starts with generate an API key. Every quick start guide has you paste it into an environment variable. The authorization scope is narrow and stable. A single service talking to a single API with a fixed set of permissions.
Let's talk about the SaaS side. Stripe, Twilio, SendGrid. These companies' entire business is APIs, and their primary authentication mechanism is the API key.
And they built elaborate systems on top of it. Stripe has publishable keys and secret keys. The publishable key is safe for client-side code. It can only create tokens, not make charges. The secret key does everything. The operational overhead of OAuth outweighs the security benefits. This is the one that makes security people uncomfortable, but it's real. If you're building an internal CLI tool used by three developers, implementing a full OAuth 2.0 flow with PKCE, token refresh, and client registration might take weeks. An API key with an IP restriction takes an afternoon.
So the platform is doing the work, not the credential.
The platform is always doing the work. That's the thing people miss. An API key doesn't enforce anything. It's a lookup value. The platform receives the key, looks it up in a database, and decides what to allow based on what it finds. Short-lived, auto-rotated, scoped to a single purpose. The platforms that use API keys best treat them as ephemeral, scoped tokens. Stripe's publishable keys are limited by design. Google Cloud's API keys with restrictions are meant for public data access where no user identity is needed. The platforms that use them worst treat them as permanent account-level credentials that grant God-mode access to everything. The entropy is high enough that brute-forcing is impractical, But that's the only defense. There's no cryptographic binding to anything. If the key leaks, the entropy doesn't matter.
So when Daniel asks when API keys are the right choice, part of the answer is, when you're a platform and you control the entire authorization stack on the server side, and you've built a permission system that the key just points to.
A service account provides identity-based authentication with IAM roles, audit logging, and automated key rotation. An API key provides none of that. If you're an internal tool calling an internal API, and the API key is stored in a vault, rotated automatically, and scoped to exactly what that tool needs, you've addressed the key's weaknesses through operational controls. AWS's preferred model now is IAM roles with temporary credentials via STS. You assume a role, get short-lived credentials that expire in hours, and rotate automatically.
Moving parts that can break.
OAuth is complicated. It has grant types, redirect URIs, refresh tokens, token introspection endpoints. It's a protocol designed for a specific problem, delegating access from a user to an application without sharing the user's credentials. They're walking away from the misuse of the model. The API key wasn't designed to be a master credential for your entire cloud infrastructure. It was designed for simple, low-risk scenarios where identity doesn't matter.
So the decision tree is there a user involved? Is there a third party? Is the resource sensitive? Is the client untrusted?
Developers reach for the API key because it works immediately, and then the system grows around it, and 5 years later you have a production infrastructure held together by a secret that's pinned in a Slack channel. If the resource is sensitive and the client is untrusted, like a mobile app or a browser, you need tokens that are bound to that client and can't be reused elsewhere. API keys can't give you that. It's every story. I've seen it at...
What about the middle ground? The case where you have a user, but the API key is scoped to that user's permissions. GitHub personal access tokens work this way.
That's a pragmatic compromise. A GitHub personal access token represents a user with specific scopes. It's still a bearer token. If it leaks, whoever has it can act as that user within those scopes. But GitHub has built enough infrastructure around it to make it workable. They show you when the token was last used. They let you set expiration. They have fine-grained tokens now that can be scoped to specific repositories. They'll even send you an email if they detect the token in a public repo. It's an API key with guardrails.
Guardrails that GitHub had to build because the primitive itself has none.
And every platform that uses API keys seriously ends up building the same guardrails. Expiration, scoping, usage tracking, revocation. They're all compensating for the fact that the underlying credential is just a string with no inherent security properties. It's a testament to how useful the simplicity is that platforms keep choosing API keys and then spending engineering effort to make them safer, rather than switching to something more secure by default.
Because the developer experience matters. Pasting a key into an environment variable is something you can do in 10 seconds. Setting up OAuth for a script you're writing at 2 in the morning is not.
And that's the real trade-off. It's not security versus insecurity, it's security versus friction. The API key wins on friction every time. The question is whether the thing you're protecting is worth the friction of doing it properly.
Daniel's prompt also asks what authorization capabilities we lose. We've covered scoping and expiration. What about delegation?
Delegation is a big one. With OAuth, a user can grant limited access to an application without sharing their credentials. The application gets a token scoped to what the user approved. The user can revoke that grant without changing their password. With an API key, there's no concept of delegation. The key either works or it doesn't. If you give someone your API key, you've given them everything the key can do. And the only way to take it back is to revoke the key entirely, which breaks everything else using it.
And there's no consent screen. No moment where the user says, yes, I'm okay with this application reading my email but not sending it.
None. The API key model assumes that whoever has the key is authorized to do whatever the key allows. There's no user in the loop, no approval step, no audit trail of grants. It's a model designed for automation, not for user consent.
Which is why it works for automation and fails for anything involving people.
There's a real tension there. The OAuth implementation probably had subtle bugs because OAuth is hard to implement correctly. The problem is when people use API keys in user-facing contexts because it's easier than setting up OAuth.
Let's talk about rotation. You mentioned it earlier, but it's worth unpacking. Why is key rotation so hard in practice?
Because an API key has no built-in transition period. With OAuth, you can issue overlapping tokens. The old one works, the new one works, you switch over, the old one expires. With an API key, if you revoke the old key before the new one is deployed everywhere, you have an outage. If you deploy the new key alongside the old one, you have to coordinate the switch. There's no standard way to do it. Every team builds their own process, and most teams don't build one at all. The key gets created, it gets used, and 3 years later it's still active because nobody wants to touch it.
And the longer it lives, the more places it's been copied to.
If your team can't maintain the OAuth implementation correctly, the API key with restrictions might be the safer choice. But rotation is painful, so it doesn't happen.
The Slack pin master key is the extreme case, but I bet most organizations have something in that direction. Maybe not the announcements channel, but a config file that everyone copies, or a shared password manager entry with no rotation policy.
That's the summary. The API key is the works on my machine of authentication. It's perfect for the individual developer prototyping something. It becomes a problem the moment you have a team or a production environment or anything worth protecting.
What's the worst API key leak you've actually seen in the wild?
They're created during initial setup, embedded in config files, and then forgotten. They outlast the people who created them and the documentation that explains what they're for. With it, he could control every device the company had ever sold. Unlock doors, disable alarms, access cameras. The key was in the app binary. Anyone who downloaded the app had it.
The key that unlocks every door, shipped inside every door.
That's the phrase. And the company's response was to revoke the key and push an update. But the underlying problem was that someone, at some point, decided that embedding an admin key in client-side code was acceptable. And it probably happened because they were trying to get something working, and the key was the quickest way, and it worked, and they moved on.
And the key stayed.
There's something almost poignant about that, but it also makes the point perfectly. API keys create persistence that outlasts human memory. The key doesn't forget. The key doesn't rotate itself.
I've got a nephew who does platform security for one of the big payment processors. He says the same thing. The keys never die. He once found a production key that had been active for 11 years. 11 years. It had outlasted 3 CEOs.
Daniel's question was about identity, and we've come around to something more fundamental. An API key doesn't just fail to represent identity, it actively obscures it.
He traced it back to an intern who'd been asked to set up a test integration. The intern generated a key with full production access because nobody told him not to. The intern left. The key stayed. It was in a config file that got copied into the production deploy script. Nobody knew it was there. For 11 years, that key could have drained the company's merchant accounts, and the only thing protecting it was that nobody had found it.
CI/CD tokens scoped to a single repository. Read-only access to public data. Server-to-server communication in a trusted network where you control both ends.
My nephew says they find keys in log files all the time. Someone adds a debug line to print the request headers, forgets about it, and suddenly the API key is in the log aggregation system, which is searchable by half the engineering org. He says the number of people who have accidentally seen a production secret is probably higher than the number who haven't.
There's no way to know.
No way to know. That's what keeps him up. He says the only thing worse than a key you know is leaked is a key you don't know is leaked. And most keys are in that second category. He's not a cheerful man, my nephew, but he's not wrong.
The log file problem is especially bad because it's so easy to do. You're debugging an authentication issue, you add a log statement, you fix the issue, you forget the log statement. The key is now in Splunk or Datadog or whatever, persisted indefinitely, indexed, searchable. And log systems aren't designed as secret stores. They're designed to be accessible.
The key leaks not through malice, but through convenience.
Do the normal course of development. That's what makes it so hard to prevent. It's not an attacker breaking in, it's a developer trying to get their job done.
My nephew has a rule. He says if you can't rotate a key in under 5 minutes without anyone noticing, the key is too powerful. Most teams can't rotate their keys at all.
5 minutes is a high bar.
It's not a high bar. It's the bar. If a key leaks on a Friday night, you don't want to be the person who has to spend the weekend rotating it across 47 services. You want to run a script and go back to dinner. Most places, the script doesn't exist. The key is hard-coded in three places, referenced in two more, and one of them is a server that Bob set up before he left and nobody knows how to access.
Bob's server. Every organization has one.
Bob's server is where keys go to live forever.
The nephew's view is that API keys are fundamentally unmanageable at scale.
His view is that they're manageable if you treat them like radioactive material. Short half-life, tracked inventory, containment protocols. Most places treat them like office supplies. That's the gap. He says the technology is fine. The operational practices are what fail. But he also says that if your security depends on operational practices being perfect, you've already lost. The credential itself should do some of the work. API keys don't.
That's the argument for short-lived credentials. A token that expires in an hour limits the damage. Even if it leaks, the window is small. The problem is that issuing short-lived credentials requires an identity infrastructure. You need something that can vouch for the requester and mint the token. That's what the cloud providers have built with IAM roles and managed identities. But if you're not on a cloud platform, or you're using a third-party service that only supports API keys, you don't have that option.
The API key persists because it's the lowest common denominator.
It's the one thing every service supports. REST API, GraphQL, gRPC, doesn't matter. You can pass an API key in a header. It works everywhere. That universality is valuable. It means you can integrate with anything without negotiating protocols or setting up federation. The cost is that you're using the least secure option available.
Which brings us back to Daniel's framework. When is it the right choice? When universality and simplicity matter more than the security properties you're giving up, and when the resource being protected doesn't justify the overhead of something stronger.
When you've built the operational controls to manage the key responsibly. Rotation, scoping, monitoring, revocation. If you can't do those things, the key is a liability no matter what it's protecting.
The misconception people hold about API keys is that they're a form of authentication. They're not. They're a shared secret that identifies a billing account or a usage quota. Calling them a key makes them sound like they unlock something specific. They don't. They're a password that you hand out and can't easily take back.
The correction is that authentication requires identity. A key has none. If you need to know who's making the request, or what they're allowed to do, or whether they still have permission, you need something that carries identity claims. An API key carries none of that. It's a pointer to an entry in a database, and everything else is up to you.
The question I keep coming back to is whether we'll ever get rid of them. Every platform is pushing toward identity-based auth, but the API key is still the first thing in every quick start guide.
It'll stick around for the same reason passwords have stuck around. It's simple, it's universal, and the alternatives require infrastructure that not everyone has. The direction of travel is toward short-lived tokens and managed identities, but API keys will be with us for a long time. The best we can do is understand what they are and what they aren't, and stop using them for things they were never designed to protect.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the nephew's perspective on the radioactive half-life of office supply credentials.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.